Chapter 15.
Am I being punked?
Is Boyd's reaction when Styles and Erica sit him down and tell him about werewolves.
I mean, seriously, is this shit going on YouTube?
No, Styles says. Boyd gives him a skeptical look. Really, no. Werewolves. They're a real thing. Totally a bunch of them in Beacon Hills.
No way, Boyd says, eating another Dorito. If you're waiting for me to say I believe you so you can tell everyone you got me, you're gonna have a long-ass wait, Stalinsky.
Styles sighs. Okay, look, normally we go for believing first and then proof, because when people just turn into werewolves and start lifting up backhoes, other people start freaking out a little. But if you're really gonna make us do this the hard way...
He elbows Erica. She gives Boyd a sunny smile and holds up one hand, letting her claws come out. Whoa, Boyd says. How do you do that?
Werewolf, she says.
Ha ha, yeah, but seriously, Boyd says. It takes a full shift, all the way to wolf form, before Boyd stops believing that they're trying to pull his leg. Then he has to sit down and hold his head in his hands for several long minutes while he wrestles it into his worldview. Finally, he looks up.
And you want to make me one of you?
Nah, man, Styles says. We just want you to come over for dinner.
School mornings have a very specific routine in the Boyd household. Given the amount of things to get ready, they basically have to. Boyd is the oldest, at 16. He has two younger brothers, 13 and 9, and two younger sisters, 12 and 7. Boyd's father works nights, so he doesn't get home until about 15 minutes after Boyd needs to leave for high school. He's home in time to see the younger kids off to the bus, but making sure that they're ready is Boyd's job. His mother's part-time job at a nursing home gets her out of the house at 6 a.m., so the morning responsibilities are largely Boyd's. It's his job to get all of his younger siblings up, his job to do Lakeisha's hair. Keely's is in cornrows right now, so that saves him some work. She had saved up her allowance for months to get them done professionally, and they'll hold for a while. Will hates getting up early, and moans and bitches the entire time, using words that Boyd would prefer he didn't know. When he has time, he makes school lunches the night before, but given all his schoolwork and now pack responsibilities on top of it, he usually ends up making them in the morning. It's a row of turkey sandwiches, carrot sticks, juice boxes, and little bags of cookies from Styles. Boyd knows that Derek would give him the money to buy better groceries. He says no because it's a point of pride for him, for all of them. They're doing fine. They don't need anyone's charity. But he lets Styles provide the cookies, partly because the kids love them, partly because Styles' alpha nature makes him want to provide for the pack, and by extension, their families, and partly because Styles' baking is a force of nature. So he makes their lunches while Will makes peanut butter toast for the two younger kids. He and Boyd just eat cereal, and Keely doesn't eat anything at all in the mornings. She's not a morning person, and all she ever wants before 9 a.m. is coffee. He makes sure they're all dressed appropriately. Will has an unfortunate love of t-shirts with slogans that get him sent home from school, and Keely has reached that stage of adolescence where she can't be trusted to dress herself. That they all have their lunches and have done most of their homework. And then he hears Styles honk the car horn outside and leaves, knowing his father will be home in 10 or 15 minutes to make sure they all get on the bus. This has been Boyd's routine for so long that it's not anything particularly noteworthy to him, which is why it's funny the first night Isaac stays over. It's the night after Sebastian Stone threatened them, and Styles has decided he doesn't want anyone alone. Derek will stay with him, of course, and Allison will stay at Scott's, leaving Lydia with Erica and Isaac with Boyd. They'll swap out a few times, he's guessing, but nobody wants to give parental headaches with opposite-sex sleepovers, Scott and Allison being the notable exception, because Melissa long ago gave up trying to separate them at night. Isaac moans when the alarm goes off at 5:30. Jesus, why? He mumbles into his pillow.
You can sleep another hour if you want, Boyd says, but he's already up and heading for the shower. He always showers in the morning, so the rest of the kids can take turns before bed. Trying to get them up early enough to shower in the morning isn't going to happen. By the time he gets out of the shower, Keely is banging on the door, demanding he hurry up so she can start her morning primping routine. And then it's impossible for Isaac to sleep because the entire house is a swirl of noise and chaos. He stumbles downstairs with his hair looking disheveled and blinks sleepily as kids run around. Boyd makes sandwiches, Will makes toast, Keely complains about her math teacher, Trey whines about how he doesn't want an apple in his lunch because he's sick of apples, Lakeisha practices her dance moves, Will finishes his history homework, Keely checks her makeup for the 18th time, Boyd quizzes Trey on his spelling since he has a test later, Lakeisha remembers she has show and tell and starts running around the house looking for something to bring. At 7 sharp, there's a horn honking outside, and Boyd shoulders his backpack. Okay, see you guys later, he says to a chorus of, bye, and see you later.
Jesus, how do you manage it every morning? Isaac asks.
Manage what? Boyd asks, genuinely puzzled. And Isaac just shakes his head and looks bewildered. Styles is a big fan of board games with the pack, especially after they've introduced a new member. The wolf games they play in the forest are good for helping the newbie learn control over their wolf, but it's nice to get to know the human side too. Besides, they can't be outside all the time. Sometimes it rains. He has a particular liking for games like Loaded Questions and Say Anything that actually involve learning about each other. Boyd is still getting used to thinking of Styles as the sort of person who cares about that kind of stuff, but he does. He's even invented a version of Trivial Pursuit where everyone in the pack wrote question-answer cards about themselves, and each of them is assigned a color. Oh, this one's easy, Erica says, after drawing her card with a flourish. What do I want to be when I grow up? A teacher, right? She asks Boyd.
Yeah,
he says with a nod. She makes a fist pump and colors in the little square on her card. Inventing a game is one thing, but Styles wasn't about to have game pieces and chips made to go with it.
What age?
Derek asks as he grabs the dice to take his turn.
Third or fourth grade, Boyd says decisively.
Thought about that a lot? Allison asks, laughing a little at his quick answer.
It's the best age, Boyd says with a nod. It's after they've learned all the really basic stuff, like how to read and how to do basic arithmetic, so you're actually teaching interesting stuff. But before they become preteens and go insane, I would seriously stick my tongue in a beehive before I would teach junior high.
Truth, Erica says, nodding. I don't have a lot of fond memories of those years.
Well, it's a nice dream, Boyd says with a sigh.
Why do you say that? Scott asks. I mean, when most people talk about their dream job, they mean like chocolate taster or lingerie designer. Teacher is a pretty achievable goal.
Not for me, Boyd says. You need a college degree for that shit.
Why wouldn't you get one of those?
Styles asks, his mouth full of Cheetos. Boyd opens his mouth, shuts it, and then sighs. He's never been an open person, never had a lot of friends, and sharing stuff like this is hard. He doesn't think he would do it under normal circumstances, but something about the pack, it makes him want to trust them. It makes him want to trust them, tell them his secrets. He'd mentioned that to Isaac at one point, and the other teenager had wholeheartedly agreed. In the end, he says,
I'd rather Will and Keely get to go.
Styles is still frowning, so Scott elbows him and rubs two fingers together in the classic gesture for money. Comprehension dawns on Styles' face. Then he says, oh, well, if that's a problem.
Take your turn, Derek. You're slowing us down,
Allison says loudly, seeing that Boyd is growing increasingly uncomfortable. Derek immediately rolls the dice, lands on one of Scott's spaces, and gives a grimace that has everyone laughing at him.
Boyd's financial troubles are forgotten, or at least put aside. The game concludes about half an hour later with Lydia crowned the victor, and they're talking about watching a movie. But it's a school night, and they're all a little sick of being crammed into Derek's apartment. Derek says he's going to go down to his studio, and that he'll drop Boyd off at home on the way, since he goes through Boyd's neighborhood.
"Sorry if we embarrassed you earlier," Derek says, keeping his eyes on the road.
"It's not a big deal," Boyd says.
Derek glances at him and says, "Look, I'm not good at shit like this, so I'm just gonna put it out there. If you want to go to college, I'll pay for it. I could pay for all five of you to go to college and not miss the money. So just, you don't need to give me an answer. Just know that it's an option for you. If you want to take it. If you'd rather I make it a loan and pay me back, that'd be fine."
Boyd folds his arms over his chest and says nothing. He doesn't know what to say. Derek means the offer in good faith, and it's hard to get angry. But it's equally hard to get over the sting of resentment that comes from someone who can afford to just throw money at other people. He knows it's not Derek's fault that he's rich, any more than it's Boyd's fault that he's poor.
"I'm applying for scholarships," he finally says, "so I guess we'll see what happens."
"Okay," Derek says, and with that, he changes the subject. And Boyd knows that he won't mention it again, not unless Boyd brings it up.
Styles is loading the dishwasher when his phone rings, and he picks it up to find Boyd as frantic as he ever gets. That is to say, that he actually interrupts Styles' casual greeting of, "Stilinski Asylum, you..."
"Styles, I can't find Lakeisha," Boyd interrupts. "She was with me just a minute ago, but I turned around and she..."
"Where are you?" Styles grabs his keys and heads out the door.
"I'm down at the mall. We were doing Christmas shopping and I tried to track her by scent, but there's too many people here and I'm not good with that kind of thing yet."
"Where exactly?" Styles asks. Boyd lets out a shaky breath.
"Right in front of the JCPenney, second floor."
"Okay, you stay where you are in case she comes looking for you. I'll be right there."
"What if she..."
Boyd can barely speak the words.
"What if something happened to her?"
"I'm sure that's not it," Styles says. "She probably just got distracted by something and wandered off. I mean, she's only 7.
"But what if someone took her?" Boyd asks.
"Then we'll find her and take her back," Styles says, with a note of steel in his voice. "I've got to drive now, okay?"
Yeah, okay,
Boyd says, and hangs up. Styles doesn't like talking on his phone while he drives, but he sets it on speaker, dials Derek, and tosses it into the passenger seat. It only takes a minute to update Derek, who says he'll call the others and meet them there. The more people, the better, especially in the mall at Christmas time. He's sure the place will be packed. It's been fewer than 10 minutes when he makes it into the JCPenney, after parking illegally and hoping he only gets ticketed, not towed. Boyd is pacing back and forth in front of the JCPenney. He's got Trey with him, one hand wrapped around the younger boy's wrist. "Okay, where was the last time you saw her?" Styles asks.
"We were walking from the food court and heading towards the Barnes & Noble," Boyd says. "I thought she was right behind me, but when I turned around to make sure, I didn't see her. I've gone back and forth like 4 times, but I haven't seen her anywhere."
"What was she wearing?" Styles asks, as Derek jogs up.
"A pink ballerina shirt and a turquoise skirt," Boyd says. "I sent Keely and Will over to security to ask if anyone's seen her or if she's gone there, right before I called you."
"Okay," Styles says. He knows that Boyd can't just stand there and wait any longer, so he says, "I'll stay here in case she comes here, because someone saw you waiting or something. Trey and I can hang out together, right, my man? Derek, take Boyd and retrace his steps. Are the others here yet?"
"They're on their way,"
Derek says, with deceptive calm.
"Come on, Boyd, we'll sniff her out."
Styles spends several tense minutes in front of the JCPenney, mind already racing through the possibilities of what might be going on. Then his phone rings. He looks at the screen to see Allison's number. "Hey," he says. "Hey, we've got her," Allison says, her voice calm and soothing. "Lydia knew exactly where to find a little girl at the mall. We're reconverging on your location." It's somewhat amusing that Allison talks like it's a mission, even when it's just a lost sibling at the mall. But Stiles is too relieved to comment on it. "I'll call Boyd if you haven't already," he says. And when she says she hasn't wanted to let him, he hangs up. Boyd has a cell phone that he let Derek get him, basically because it's a pack requirement to have a cell phone, and he wasn't allowed to argue. Stiles taps his screen a couple times to call him. "She's fine," he greets Boyd. "Lydia and Allison found her. Head back to the JCPenney, okay?"
"Okay," Boyd says, his voice a little choked. "Okay, yeah."
He's back a few moments later. Derek has gone to the security substation to find his other two siblings and reassure them that everything is fine. 7-year-old girls don't move as quickly, so it's another minute before they spot Allison and Lydia coming back, each of them holding one of her hands. She spots Boyd and bursts into tears. "Bernie!" she wails, throwing herself into his arms.
"I stopped to look at the puppies, and then I followed someone, but he wasn't you, and I didn't know where you were. So I went to the nice lady at the teddy bear shop, and she was going to call Mom, but I couldn't remember her number, and...
she says, and breaks out into another sob. "The nice lady at the teddy bear shop let you walk off with her?" Stiles asks Allison in an undertone. "She knows me," Allison says. "Well, she knows us, you know." Stiles nods. They do have something of a reputation around town. Keely and Will come trotting up a few minutes later, with Derek a few paces behind them, and there's a lot of hugging, and Boyd declares that that's quite enough excitement for one day. They'll have to finish their Christmas shopping over the weekend. Stiles says he'll walk out with them. The others exchange waves and goodbyes and head for the various entrances they had parked near.
"Thanks," Boyd says as they're walking outside.
"Hey, no problem," Stiles says.
Yes, thank you for helping me find her, but thanks for not making me feel like some overreacting worrywart."
"Dude," Stiles says with a snort. "When my dad gets a paper cut at work, I go into anxiety overdrive. I could teach a class called Advanced Family Panic."
"Yeah, well," Boyd says, trying not to get emotional. "Thanks anyway."
"You're welcome," Stiles says. "Vernie."
Boyd gives him an unamused look. "No," he says. "Just no."
"It's cute," Stiles says.
"It's for little sisters only," Boyd says.
Stiles grins and nods. "Okay," he says. "You got it." The problem with Stiles and Boyd's younger siblings is threefold. The first is that Stiles is, and always has been, impulsive. That's not to say that there aren't times where he can step back, rationally assess a situation, and make informed decisions. But when things aren't do or die, he has a tendency to just do whatever jumps into his head. The second problem is that Stiles has money. Since he and Derek have basically opened a joint account for pack expenses, he has lots of money. And the third problem is that he has the overriding alpha instinct to take care of people, take care of Boyd, which, by extension, means taking care of Boyd's younger siblings. He means well, and Boyd knows that, so he tries not to let it bother him when Stiles does things like bring over 8 bags of groceries that includes all the things that the kids have been whining about wanting. He doesn't complain when Stiles shows up with a gift certificate to Sports Authority because Boyd had mentioned that Trey's sneakers were getting really worn out. He doesn't say anything when it's back-to-school shopping time, and somehow Stiles winds up taking the girls shopping and buying them half of a new wardrobe. The problem is, it grates on him. Styles providing all the things he couldn't provide. He knows that Styles doesn't mean it that way, that Styles would be genuinely bewildered by the fact that it bothers Boyd. Making it worse is the fact that the kids have clearly pegged Styles as a pushover and someone with money, and they clearly don't have the same reservations about it that Boyd does. He's not sure why it's different. Maybe it's because he's the oldest, and every dime he's earned over the past few years has gone straight into the house fund. Maybe it's because the others were so much younger when the family fell on hard times, and they don't remember what it was like to not worry about these things. Boyd knows that Derek's offer to pay for him, to pay for all of them, to go to college was genuine, and he knows that a sane person would jump at that chance. So what if it's charity? A little voice inside him whispers. Why should you punish yourself because they want to do something nice for you? He nearly blows his stack when Styles buys Keely a phone and only says vaguely, "Oh, well, she said she really wanted one, and you won't have to worry about the bill, because I put her on the family plan with Derek and Isaac and stuff." This, of course, leads to Will bitching and moaning until he gets a phone too, but he manages to keep his temper in check, only saying to Styles, "Check with me before you buy them stuff like that, okay?" And Styles says, "Sure," a little puzzled but not upset. But when it really comes to a head is the day that Styles is there, after school, along with Danny, Isaac, and Scott. Derek is at his studio, and the girls are doing their own thing at Lydia's house. Trey is doing a book report on their ancient computer, and it gives him a blue screen of death. "Aw, man," he says, smacking it, and it goes dark. "Don't hit it, that won't help," Boyd says automatically, and walks over and starts fiddling with it. Most of the time he can get it to come back to life, but this time he can't. Danny comes over to help and proclaims the motherboard dead. "I can probably salvage the data off of it by taking out the hard drive and plugging it into another computer," he offers. "But the computer itself is pretty much fried. You'll need to get a new one." "Great," Boyd says, running both hands over his hair, thinking about how much that's going to eat into their budget. "How much do they run these days?" "You can get a pretty decent desktop for $300 or $400, Danny says. "I mean, you wouldn't need to get a new monitor or anything." "Here, look at this," Styles says. He already has his laptop out, working on something of his own, and now he's got a website pulled up. "I'm not a Mac guy, sorry, but HP's website has a deal right now to get a desktop for $629 that can handle just about anything. I could..." "No," Boyd snaps, and Styles blinks at him. Boyd has to stop and take a breath. "I appreciate it, Styles, really, but you can't just buy us a new computer."
I can't?"
Styles is genuinely bewildered.
"You know that Derek has..."
"Yes," Boyd practically shouts. "I'm aware that Derek is richer than God, okay? You can stop rubbing it in."
The house goes silent. Styles is left with his mouth slightly open, his expression a combination of surprise and hurt, and the tiniest bit of anger. The smallest hint of, "I'm an alpha, and I won't be spoken to that way by one of my betas," before he locks that down.
"Wow, okay, I'm sorry," he says, lifting his hands in surrender. "I didn't mean to, you know, rub anything, anywhere." Boyd squares his jaw and looks away.
"It's not... I know you mean well, Styles, but I just... We can't be dependent on the charity of other people. We'll get it figured out."
For a minute, it seems like Styles might argue, and Boyd can practically see the argument scrolling across his face. "You can depend on me. I'm your alpha. And I know you work hard, but you can never keep your money for yourself. And I only want what's best for all of you." But for once, he manages to remember that discretion can be the better part of valor.
"Okay," he says. And after that, Styles doesn't buy them things anymore, beyond a book here and there, or a few pizzas on occasion. And he doesn't say a word about it. And somehow, Boyd feels even worse.
"This is the worst day of my life,"
Boyd moans. What's wrong? Erica asks. Boyd doesn't look up from where he's trying to suffocate himself in the couch cushions.
Keeley has a crush on Edward Cullen.
Lydia gives a theatrical shudder. Don't worry, she says, with smooth confidence. I'll handle this.
Look, Erica says, leaning against the counter as Boyd serves hot chocolate to dozens of enthusiastic children. You have to understand that he doesn't mean anything by it.
I know that, Boyd says. They're talking about this again, despite the fact that he really doesn't want to. Because Stiles came within inches of offering to buy him a car. To be fair to Stiles, he had managed to rein himself in. To continue being fair, it had only come up because there had been a pack thing and he wanted Boyd there, but there wasn't anybody available to go pick him up. To be increasingly fair, it is an incredible hassle getting the kids to all their activities by foot and still making time for the pack. It's not like he's the only pack member without a car. Erica doesn't have one and won't be able to get her license until she's been seizure-free for 5 years under California law. Scott only has one available if he drives his mother to work for the day and picks her up afterwards. Isaac doesn't have one either. But Isaac lives with other pack members, and Scott's house is only 3/4 of a mile down from Stiles, and Erica's mom is a stay-at-home mom who can almost always be relied upon to get Erica places she needs to be. It's Boyd who's the problem. Boyd who lives on the poorer side of town, almost 20 minutes away. Boyd who has parents who work a lot. Boyd who has to worry about the kids' schedules and deal with the fact that the time he forgot to pick Trey up after soccer practice, CPS got called. So the car thing had come up pretty legitimately, and Boyd had just flatly said he was sorry, but a car wasn't in his future. He had seen Stiles shift, open his mouth, and then look away. The awkward tension had persisted, even after the subject was changed.
He's just... it's the alpha thing, you know, Erica continues. He wants to take care of you, and your family is like an extension of you. It's not about him having more than you. It's not about pity, you know.
Boyd glances at her, knowing that she's hit the nail on the head and hating it. It's not, he starts, and sees the look on her face. He sighs.
Okay, yeah, it is. I hate feeling pitied. It's a point of pride, okay? We've all worked hard, and now Stiles comes in and he can just give the kids anything they want in a way I never could.
You know, Erica says, sucking soda through a straw, you remind me of my dad.
She sees Boyd's eyebrows go up.
He was jealous of Stiles, too, because getting the bite made me healthy, and that was something he could never give me.
How'd he get over it?
Oh, he didn't, Erica says cheerfully. He's still mad about it.
She takes another drink.
Kinda silly, right? I mean, it's not like he wouldn't have done anything to help me. It's not his fault that he couldn't, and Stiles could.
Boyd shakes a dish rag at her. I see what you're doing here. You're reframing the problem in a way that makes me look ridiculous.
No, I'm reframing the problem in a way that might help you see it the way Stiles does, Erica says. Look, I get it, okay? You don't want to be a charity case. And I know that Stiles can come on a little strong, that he can be impulsive and totally clueless about things that every other normal person would get. And I get that he was causing some problems for you by doing stuff like buying Keeley a phone without thinking of Will getting jealous and making you worry that the kids were going to take advantage of him. I'm not saying that he wasn't out of line. I'm just saying maybe there can be some sort of compromise.
There's a long pause while Boyd serves 3 more customers at the ice rink's refreshment stand. When he's finally free again, he lets out a sigh.
You know, he says, studying the counter as he meticulously wipes it down again. Sometimes I think people equate being poor with being deaf, like they won't hear what they say about us. Like the women at the grocery store who see us using food stamps and make snide remarks about how maybe we should spend less of our money on drugs. Or the woman at the church we used to go to, who said that maybe we wouldn't be as poor if my mom had learned to close her legs. This one time, Will got a Nintendo DS for Christmas, right? The whole family saved up, because he wanted it so badly. And then his teacher at school took it away from him, saying he must have stolen it. My mom had to go get it back for him. She was so embarrassed that day. It's like... He lets out a gusty sigh. People seem completely unaware of the concept that things can just go bad. Erica quietly drinks her soda. Your mom was hit by a car, right?
Yeah, Boyd says, when I was 13. My dad worked for this private company. He was a security guard. It was a good job and paid well, but the insurance wasn't good. My mom had to have two different knee surgeries, and then 6 weeks of intensive rehab, and it just wiped us out. And then 2 months after that, the company my dad worked for folded, and he lost his job. No severance pay, no nothing. And it's like everything changed overnight. But it wasn't our fault. It wasn't anyone's fault.
Except the jerk who hit your mom. Erica says,
yeah, if only we had ever found out who that was, our lives would be easier. Boyd remarks.
Erica nods a little and grimaces. Okay, well, look, I'm going to tell you a story. Something else to keep in mind. After I got the bite, I went on this shopping spree, right? Because none of my clothes fit, and I didn't own any makeup or hair supplies or anything like that. But I wanted to be pretty. So we're talking complete non-necessities, right? But Derek paid for the whole thing. Because, let me finish, I can see you about to interrupt me. He paid for it because he likes to spend money on the pack. He's got tons of money. You know that. But had you ever thought about where it came from? It's his family's money. The insurance money from the fire and everything. Just, sometimes I think it makes him feel dirty to have it. To profit off their deaths. I know that's not what it really is, but that's how he feels about it. Which is why he likes to spend it on us. On the pack. It's why he's building that ridiculous house out on the preserve and doesn't try to stop us when we add things to it. Because when he spends money on us, he can feel a little more at peace with everything that's happened to him. So it isn't just Styles, you know? Derek wants to help you too. And it's not because he pities you. Because if there was anyone who could ever understand bad luck and bad times, it's Derek fucking Hale, you know? Boyd thinks about this, then gives another sigh.
Yeah, I know, he says.
I'm just saying, compromise, Erica says. Don't let Styles buy the kids anything they want, because he is a pushover, and has some problems with impulse control. And the whole alpha thing means he'll go to ridiculous lengths to make people happy, and we don't want your sibs learning they can get anything they want. Don't let them buy you some $40,000 car with heated seats and an all-leather interior. But, you know, if they want to take you down to the used car dealership and drop a few grand on a piece of crap Honda Civic with hand-crank windows, maybe that would be good for everyone in the long run.
I guess you're right,
Boyd says, glancing up as another customer comes up to the window. He makes their cocoa and gives them their change. The thing is that Styles, for all his brilliance, is also kind of an idiot, Erica says. And, you know, socially incompetent. You've just got to be clear with him on what your boundaries are. That's all. Because otherwise he doesn't know what's okay, and he gets flaily and weird about it.
So true, Boyd says with a snort.
He's still mulling it over when his shift ends, and Scott picks them up, and they head over to Styles' house for the night. Styles is cooking, so Boyd doesn't interrupt him after their initial hello. But once they're sitting down at dinner together, he buckles down and says,
"So I thought maybe we could swing by that used car lot downtown this weekend, if you wanted. Get me some wheels."
He still feels iffy on the whole concept, but when Styles looks up with an enormous dorky grin, he feels a lot better about everything. "You're laughing at me," Styles says.
"No,
Boyd responds, automatically, then chuckles. Well, yeah, a little.
Dude, Styles says, if you know a better way to peel potatoes...
Seriously? Boyd asks. You seriously think I don't know a better way to peel potatoes?
Well, if you did, you could have just told me about it 20 minutes ago, instead of watching me do this for ages. This is why I normally just make baked potatoes. But no, Scott just has to have mashed potatoes for Thanksgiving. And God forbid I leave the skins on, because my dad won't eat them if he thinks I'm trying to sneak something healthy into his diet.
Boyd shakes his head a little. Doesn't being so dramatic ever get tiring? He asks. He has to admit that he doesn't envy Styles having to do the cooking prep for a Thanksgiving dinner that will have to feed so many people. He's done it for his own family of seven, and it's not fun. You have to boil them first.
How the hell am I supposed to peel it after it's boiled?
Boil one, and I'll show you.
Styles gives him a somewhat suspicious look, like he's wondering if Boyd is trying to pull one over on him and make him waste one of his precious potatoes. But then he throws his hands up in the air and puts a pot of water over to boil.
Boyd just gives a snort of laughter and goes back to his math homework, but keeps an eye on his watch. When the potato has been in long enough, he stands up and heads into the kitchen. Styles watches him, still with suspicion, as he fills a mixing bowl with water, then dumps some ice into it. He grabs a pair of tongs, grabs a potato out of the boiling water, and dunks it into the ice water. Then he slowly counts to five before lifting it out. Styles' eyes grow wide as Boyd grips the potato in both hands and twists. The peel splits in half and slides smoothly off the end of the potato.
Dude, Styles says. Dude, that was the sexiest thing I've ever seen.
Boyd gives him a look. I'm going to tell Erica you said that.
Are you kidding me? She'd agree with me.
What's that you've got there? Erica says, jumping up to rub her cheek against Boyd's as he enters the den.
Letter from UC East Bay, Boyd says, with something of a grimace.
Oh my God! Allison bounces over to check it out. What's it say?
I haven't opened it yet, Boyd admits. I guess I just wanted to be here in case there's bad news in it or something.
Aw, come on. You're not that worried about getting accepted, right? Scott asks. Your grades are probably good enough to get into any school you wanted.
Yeah, I know, Boyd says, as other pack members are drifting in from their individual pursuits. About half of them have already gotten their college acceptance letters and decided where they're going. Lydia's going to Stanford, because of course she is, and Danny's going to Berkeley. Allison's gotten her acceptance to San Francisco State, but she's waiting to see if Scott got in too, before making a final decision. The others still have answers pending. Personally, he's already gotten accepted to San Jose State, where Styles is headed, but he'd rather go to UC East Bay, because they have a great educational program. That's why he couldn't bring himself to open the letter as soon as he found it. It just seemed right to open it with the pack.
Well, come on, Isaac says. Don't leave us hanging.
Boyd shoves the envelope at Styles. You do it, he says. Styles grabs the envelope and opens it without waiting to see if Boyd will change his mind. He unfolds the paper, and a wide grin appears on his face, answering everyone's question before he even starts reading.
Dear Vernon Boyd, we are pleased to inform you that you have been accepted into the University of California.
He keeps reading, but nobody can hear him, because they're all cheering and hugging Boyd. Erica gives him a kiss on the cheek. Even Derek is smiling.
When do you find out about the scholarship? Isaac asks, when the furor has died down somewhat.
Probably not for another couple weeks, Boyd says. But even if I don't get it, the financial aid will get me through, since I won't have to pay for housing.
Awesome! Scott says, thumping Boyd on the back.
Break out the champagne, Allison says to Styles, grinning. And Stiles laughs and starts handing out cans of ginger ale. A little while later, everyone is back to what they were doing when he got there, and he's settled down at the table to finish up some of his homework. He's a little surprised when Stiles plops into the chair next to him. He knows that Stiles' mind is a million places right now, what with his grandparents being in town and everything. "What's up?" he asks.
"I just wanted to say I'm really sorry about the whole thing with the money," Stiles says earnestly. "I know that I was kind of a clueless, insensitive prick about it a lot of the time."
Boyd gives a little shrug.
"I was a little touchy, maybe."
"Yeah, but it's not like you didn't have your reasons, and I was stepping all over your toes and shit."
Stiles gives a huffing sigh.
Someday I'll learn impulse control."
Boyd shakes his head a little.
"That'll be the day," he says,
and Stiles laughs. They both glance up as Derek walks in, sitting down next to Stiles and wrapping an arm around his waist.
"Anyway," Boyd says, "I guess it's nice to know that you guys care, even if you step on my toes."
"I'll probably do it again," Stiles says with a wince. "Just bitch slap me if I get out of line. Deal?"
"Deal," Boyd agrees. "But I know I'm going to be okay. You know, I've got a really good shot at that scholarship. And even if I don't, with the financial aid, I'll make it. And things are getting better for us, too. I mean, Dad just got a raise, so my mom might be able to work fewer hours once I'm away at school. I want the kids to have this moment, too. Of getting a letter from college. Of having a dream that they know is in reach. I mean, Lakeisha wants to be a dancer, and she's good. She really is. And I want her to be able to go to the best school. And if that means letting go of the idea that we can't ever ask for help, of this idea that I have to be able to do all of this on my own, I think maybe I can get used to that."
"Well, we'll always be here," Stiles says cheerfully.
Boyd shakes his head and says,
"This is getting sentimental. I'm outta here."
"Is that you, honey?"
Boyd's mother, Sharon, calls out as he comes in through the front door, and he calls back an affirmative.
"Are you by yourself?"
"Yeah,"
Boyd calls back. His parents have gradually gotten used to the fact that he often has one or two people with him these days. But it's a Monday night. Everyone's tired and has loads of homework to do. So they split up early. He comes into the kitchen and says loudly,
"All I brought with me are these chocolate chip cookies."
Feet are heard pounding all over the house, and a minute later, cookies are disappearing into mouths while Sharon says,
"Only one each. It's nearly time for dinner."
"Okay,"
the kids chorus with full mouths. Boyd leans over and gives his mother a kiss on the cheek. She smiles up at him.
"How is your day, honey?"
she asks.
"Good," Boyd says, smiling. "My day was good."